Welcome, everybody, to Blake and Greg's ACC-SEC yearly wrap-up podcast.
Is that what it is now?
I guess. My name is Greg.
And I'm Blake.
And Blake, first of all, how are you feeling, brother?
Well, I'm feeling okay today, Greg. I'm really jonesing for football. Last year didn't seem to really be satisfying. We all know this past year and a half, it's been kind of a cluster, you know what, for everybody. So last year we didn't get around to doing this based on that. And also yourself went through a lot of life changes.
To say the
very
least.
Very good life changes, but then some, you know, that we're trying, but
I'll
let you talk about
that. All right. So first of all, I do have to say, listeners, if anybody's even still listening to this, we appreciate you. Last year was a bit of a challenge, like you said, for obvious reasons for everybody. So last summer, Blake and I were talking. We were like, "Yeah, you want to do a podcast?" We're like, "Yeah, let's do it." And then for a while, you know, we weren't even sure if the season was going to happen. It was very touch and go for a while, as you guys can remember. And then even when they said the season was going to happen, we didn't really know what that was going to consist of. Is it going to happen in the spring? Remember they talked about that for a while. Is it going to be a half season, like a conference only? Is it going to be?
Yep.
And so Blake and I were like, hey, you know, let's see how this shakes out before we even bother like getting into this. There's no reason to make predictions and do all this if it doesn't happen or if it happens in a different way. And you know, so that was going on. And then in late July, my wife and I, we had our first child, which was a very good thing. The experience was awful. It was particularly bad for a number of different reasons, but he's happy and healthy and he's great. And so he just turned a year a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of taking up a lot of time. You're having a newborn.
Yeah.
And
all this happened for you July 31st.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
So,
correct.
So, your son's born July 31st. And you have all that, plus we have a season that we're not sure about starting in less than a month.
Right.
The whole thing was the timing wasn't good.
Right. Yeah. So,
you know, on our end, it just wasn't.
So when it was finally determined that the season was going to happen and they sort of settled on how the season was going to happen, my wife actually was sick and she had all these kind of crazy symptoms and things that didn't really match up. And as it turns out, we didn't find, you know, so I was not only dealing with a newborn, but we were also both working. And you know, and she was sick, and so we were having to, you know, sort of navigate that. And we find out late September last year that she had a pretty rare, and when I say rare, she's the second person to ever have this, which I think you knew that, Blake. But
yes, I did.
In the medical literature, she's the second person to ever have this particular ailment. But she ended up contracting a heart infection during the delivery process, which caused a handful of strokes. And also, she had to have a heart valve replacement. So she was definitely the youngest person in the cardiovascular wing for those 5 or 6 days that she was in recovery. But yeah, she had to have open heart surgery, and of course, neurologically, she had to go through some. There's some rehab for that. She lost some vision, and I know. And so, of course, after, you know, once all this stuff happened, it was like I wasn't even watching football, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, the football season obviously becomes really, I mean, pretty much irrelevant.
Right.
Personally, it does, and for us, I watched it, but we were a lot more concerned about what's going on your way than what's going on Saturday. So.
Right, and yeah. I know. First of all, I want to thank everybody who we had a lot of people reach out to us and were like, "Hey, you guys doing a season? Like, where are you guys?"
Yeah,
I responded to some. So I know I didn't respond to all, and actually, we had quite a few listeners that I'd never met before who'd never said anything who sent in, and we appreciate that. And hopefully, you guys stick around, but and are here to listen to this, but. I know I responded to a few and got some good feedback and some well wishes and things. It's very much appreciated. Just so everybody knows, we're doing well now. You know, we're sort of had to navigate the new kind of normal with blood thinners and levels checks, and then also at the same time he's growing up and we're having to deal with that, and we're both working. It's kind of crazy, but so in light of that, all that is to say, Blake and I are very excited to talk football this year. We don't know the particulars of how this show is going to go this year. You know, in the past, we've done kind of really long episodes every week for the ACC and the SEC, and we kind of broke down every game. I don't think that's reasonable to assume we'll be able to do that this year. I just don't. But I do think that we'll be able to produce something every week, even if it's kind of an abbreviated episode, even if we just kind of hit the highlights rather than go in depth. I do think we'll be able to do something. But if we miss a week or two here and there, just know that it's not, we'd prefer not to, but just kind of how life gets in the way. It's tough to find times.
I mean, I would love to talk for 6 hours, but you know, it's tough to do that right now with your situation. And then, the world situation.
Correct.
Just everything, how screwed up everything is right now.
Yeah. The one thing, the one really, touchstone.
It's like day to day. It's like I live day to day, Greg.
The one touchstone that we do have is I guess college football, which,
yes.
Which so listeners, thanks again for listening. Thanks again for checking in on us. We really appreciate that. Hopefully we can produce something that you guys will enjoy, because we enjoy doing this all the time. So hopefully you guys will enjoy what we do. So what we typically do this time of year, right before the season starts, we typically talk about the ACC and SEC, both of who we think is going to come out of the divisions as the champion. And we also usually talk sort of the surprise team and then also the disappointing team. So Blake, and that's what going to be what this show is going to consist of mostly. Yeah. We're hopefully this coming week we'll be able I know you want to talk about name, image, and likeness, and also conference realignment, something else we need to talk about.
Yeah, and also I want to do a Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame for last year. I don't want to talk about the season because the season was so, I mean, hell, it's a long time ago. A and B, I don't remember. It's weird. I don't remember. I mean, I remember the season, but I don't remember the details like I usually do.
Yeah.
But
well, a lot was going on
that I did like and didn't like last year that I could sure talk about, because I think they need to be talked about, frankly. And then, of course, Bama was really good. And that's kind of the season last year, I think, in my book, in some ways, is Bama was, once again, I mean, that was one of the most dominant teams I've seen in a long time. But I think part of that was because, obviously, teams didn't have spring to play defense, to get their defense ready. And defenses last year took a step back. I think this year they'll be better because they had spring ball, but we'll see. I hope they're better because, I mean, I like shootouts, but not that much.
Like
a little bit. Well,
Blake, go ahead. Talk about last season if you want, and then that'll be a good segue to talk about what we think is going to happen this season.
Bama was really awesome, as we know. That was an extremely dominant football team. They lost all the weapons they lost. Even Jalen Waddle early season was out, but Devontae Smith had probably the best receiving season I've ever seen. Joe Mechie came along, and their whole team just, you know, the quarterback, Mac Jones, you know, the defense was good. And then you had a lot of good teams. Bama was the elite team with a few good teams around them, Ohio State, Clemson. And you probably throw who else in the mix there? Texas A&M had a good year last year. But it seemed like they were a step above everybody else. And I also say that, you know, the Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame thing, I had to do this for the Hall of Shame. I mean, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, I'll just say
Bama.
Nick Saban. Because he's the greatest coach on any level in any sport ever, in my opinion, just based on what I've seen and the way he can do it with replacing assistants. Because staff continuity is so important when it comes to winning football games.
Except
and Saban doesn't have it, and he still wins.
Right.
Like most schools, it's so important. You got to have that staff continuity. Hall of Shame, I'm going to hammer these two guys. The sports media, because when you see guys like that, I used to respect like Pat Forty and Darren Revelle and these guys who were clowns and who were more inclined to talk about how dangerous COVID was and how people would die because the season was being held. And they are college football analysts to that. To hell with them. They are pieces of shit. Pardon the French. You have kids listening. I'm sorry about that, but that's what they are because they put their politics – instead of football, they talk about their politics first and kind of wove it into football. And that, to me, I'm done with them because I watch football to get away from that crap. And when you throw that crap in every article you have about how dangerous it is to play because of COVID, how players will die, well, guess what, Pat Forty and Darren, a.k.a. Karen Revelle, nobody died.
Right.
Nobody died.
Nobody even got sick.
Right. And they try to panic the world. And that's their job to cover something that they're trying to actually say, let's don't have the season. And it's their job to cover that season.
Right.
That's how ridiculous all this stuff is. If those are your beliefs, fine. But let's talk about college football. They didn't. They made it political because it is political. I'm sorry it is. And I just have no use for Darren Revelle, Pat Forty, and other guys too. But those two in particular, especially Pat Forty, who I used to like, who I think now is just more than a clown, and I think ruined his credibility.
Frankly. One thing that I do remember from the season is I guess this was in September, kind of before the crap hit the fan for me.
Yeah.
On a personal note, but I remember Saban tested positive. Do you remember?
Yes, and it was like 9/11.
Yeah.
It was.
But Saban tested positive, and then, you know, the rules were such that you had to produce three straight negative tests in order, you know, or there was some sort
was
of time
it three
frame.
Straight?
It was either like 2 weeks or you had to do three straight negative tests within a certain amount of time. I don't remember what it was, but he did it. So it really, really kind of made it to where it seemed like it was probably a false positive to begin with.
Which there's a ton of false positives,
right,
as we know. But
what was interesting was when he tested positive, how the people you're talking about and others too in the media sort of jumped on that, and they were like, this is exactly why the football season shouldn't happen. You got Nick Saban, who's a 70 something year old, however old he is. He's not 70, he's pushing 70, right?
He's
late 60s. You know, and then it turns out he actually wasn't. He either wasn't positive or he had a very mild case, one or the other, and then it's like they had to sort of backtrack, but it didn't matter. Nobody called him on it. They just moved on to the next thing.
At that point,
Trevor Lawrence had probably tested positive, and he was asymptomatic, but you can jump on that because he's the number one pick, and he's going to have COVID. And this.
Most people that age, athletes that age, are going to be asymptomatic and very mild symptoms.
You're talking about some of the healthiest people. Yeah, you're talking about some of the healthiest people on earth, college athletes, not necessarily the 330-pound
Greg, even those guys, you know,
but they're young.
You see in person, they're young. If you see them in person, it's like, you know what? They're not fat.
Right.
They're just big.
Yeah.
And that's different.
They're not unhealthy,
per se. They're just big, and they're muscular. And yeah, they have some fat, but they're not like a 45-year-old guy walking around that's 330 pounds. He looks a lot different than they do.
Right, and then also now we know that the outdoor transmission is almost impossible. Short of someone sneezing into your open mouth
as you walk by. To a national park, you have to wear a face mask, I've heard, which is totally clownish in itself. But hey, look,
Blake, there's nothing, optics are
important, Greg.
There's nothing I want to do more in the middle of August than go to a national park with a face mask on outdoors when it's 110 degrees, real feel outside.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's been a crazy, crazy time, and
it almost felt personal because it was almost like they wanted to take the one thing away from us that we were waiting for to get away from all of that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and they were trying to take that too.
I'll be honest with you, when it comes to media, I have checked out. I'm done. I'm sick of the crap. I'm sick of the fear porn, as Clay Travis would say, because it's, you know, and this year, at least we're not hearing that on the level we heard it last year. I'm not.
Right.
I hear football and it's like, as far as I know, stadiums are going to be full this fall.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know.
So, and it's come to the point to me where I'm wondering if this conference stuff, Texas, Oklahoma joining the SEC, and I think the ACC will expand to 16 teams. I think we'll try to get Notre Dame if you can, and then like maybe West Virginia. And then you have the Big 12 that maybe left out, or they may have to join with the Pac-12. I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm starting to wonder if the whole reason for that is to pull away from the NCAA. So they can make their own rules, and they say, no, you can't have full stadiums. And they say, if the NCAA says that, then they say, nope, sorry, we're not going to do that because we're not a part of the NCAA anymore. Or I know in some cases states decide that, which makes sense because I don't have an issue with states deciding that. But I think they're trying to get to where these schools basically write the rules. Like, basically Alabama and the SEC writes the rules.
Yeah,
Ohio State, Michigan write the rules in the Big Ten. It used to be in the course of the Big 12 was Texas and Oklahoma. They're leaving, so – it's a crazy world we live in with that, in name, image, and likeness, and all the stuff going on.
Yeah,
I think those
conversations should probably be their own episode. If we can do that,
we can't get into it today because that's a whole podcast.
Yeah, so listeners, what we're thinking about doing is kind of going more in depth with these topics, sort of separate podcasts, and then sometime before the season starts, we'll go with our normal sort of format, which is we do predictions. And we do predictions for every game. Some games we may not have much to say about. We might say, Bama will win for, instance, or something like that. But we do, but I do want to do that before the first week. And then we'll try to do something a little bit more regular as the season goes along.
Yeah, but because we got like next weekend, they'll have a few games and then
week zero,
the next weekend, it'll be, it's week zero. The next weekend will be, I mean, it's always Saturday before Labor Day is the first Saturday. So that'll be, I guess, 2 weeks from this weekend. So
Saturday. Oh, yeah, you're right. Saturday before Labor Day. Yeah, Labor Day weekend, Saturday.
Week one, because, there's always Labor Day's on a Monday than the Saturday before. And usually there's a game on Labor Day night. I don't know if there is this year or not. I haven't really paid that much attention to it. But there typically is. I know that – but there's some good games week one. But also week zero, I don't know what's going on with week zero. I haven't really
There's not much.
Either.
There's not much really happening week zero. But, okay. All right, Blake, let's go ahead and get into this, man. You want to talk ACC or SEC first?
Either one, pick them.
Well, heck, let's do my pride and joy, my ACC, which, you know, Blake, it's kind of crazy. Back in 2015, 2016, there was talk about the ACC being one of the better conferences, which actually it was.
Yes.
It was.
It was, and of course, you know why.
Because good coaching, good quarterback play.
Quarterback play back then, you had Trubisky, you had Watson, you had the guy at Florida State who was good until he got killed so often. I think he finally ended up dying.
Francois,
because remember he was good and he just got beat up so much he kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys.
He transferred out, I think. Good.
He had the guy from Miami, Brad Kyle, was a good quarterback. Right. You had the guy from Pitt, was a good college quarterback. You had
you even had a couple of guys during that time from State that were good. You had Brissett was good right around the time.
And Finley was right around that time, too, and he was a good player. So the ACC was loaded with quarterbacks, and then now – And the heck, the kid from Syracuse was another good one.
He beat us.
Yeah, Dungy.
Yeah, I always forget
his name. So there's a lot of good quarterback play. I mean, there's a lot of good quarterback play then, and then now you're seeing fast forward. That's kind of gone the other way. And it's basically now, Greg, you realize how important quarterback play is to a successful season and a chance to win a championship. If you don't have good quarterback play, unless you're
– Alabama.
Yeah, but even still, they've moved on from that philosophy. Unless you're – Will Muschamp still has that same philosophy. We'll play a 7-3 ball game. He's an idiot. He hasn't realized it. Now you can't do that, and that's why he's been fired so often. But even Saban's moved on and said, you know what, we need a star quarterback. In fact, let's make sure he gets a 7-figure NIL deal, even though he's never taken a really legitimate snap, which he will this year. Now, he's a 5-star kid. He's talented, but, a lot of money for a kid who's never taken a legit important snap, I should say. He's taking snaps, but not starting a football game, trying to win a championship. So
it's gonna be
very interesting to see how that plays out, how the ACC quarterback play plays out, because I think it has to be better because it's been so hit or miss the last 3 or 4 years. But you've got at least one at UNC that may be one of the best in the country, Sam Howell.
Mm-hmm.
The kid from Clemson is a talented guy. He's kind of like he has a Dante
say his name. Pepper. Say his name.
DJ Wigodoja.
That's almost, brother.
That guy, he's a big, big kid, kind of in the mold of Dante Culpepper, that big pocket passer who's athletic enough to make plays, but who his main games will be throwing the ball down the field.
He's got an arm.
He's a talented kid. Then you got, I'm trying to think who else in the ACC.
They're really pushing the kid from Miami, King.
Yeah, Garrett King. And okay, we'll see. I'm more of a we'll see approach on him, Greg, to be honest with you.
That's kind of how you normally have to be with Miami in general.
Yes, because as good as they were, they've won their division one time in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
So
and then,
it's kind of hard to really
– And then they went on and got spanked by us. And that was the year we got spanked. And that was – That team, you said it was probably our best defense maybe ever, and I think you're right. But otherwise, that team was probably towards the bottom in terms of how strong our teams have been the last 6 or 7 years. And we still spanked Miami, and then we went to playoffs and got beat by Bama.
But if you play with Bryant back then, you play him smart and give him and kind of play within what he can do. You're gonna win most of your games because you're better than most teams played.
Except Bama.
Except Bama, but, that's Bama.
All right, Blake, well, let's hear about your predictions for the ACC this year. Who's coming out of each division?
The Atlantic is – I'm going to go on a wire here and say Clemson.
Bold.
Is my favorite to win the Atlantic. That's a tough pick. But at the end of the day, Clemson, to me, are they going to lose a little bit on offense, losing Lawrence and losing Etienne and losing Rodgers? Yeah, but I think – and also the offensive line lost a few guys, which will be, you know – I mean, I think you can replace those guys. They won't be maybe as good, but good enough. But I think you'd be better on defense this year. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I agree.
I think the front lines will be good. I think the linebackers will be good. You got Skalski back for his 34th year. I think that's going to be important for you.
I heard Bullware's coming back too.
Bullware's coming back, and old Spencer Shuey. Was that his name back?
Yeah, way back.
So then you, in your secondary, you even kind of. Shoe Darian Kendrick, you know, he transferred. Y'all just didn't even want to keep him. I think he's a little bit better athlete than football player, frankly. I think you feel like you can replace him with somebody who maybe is a better football player. I just don't see how you don't win the Atlantic, Greg. The Coastal, I like North Carolina based on what I see. Sam Howell, maybe the best quarterback in the country. They're recruiting really well. Their defense should be much better. I think they'll take a step back on offense because they lose those running backs.
Yeah,
who both were 1,000-yard rushers. You can't replace those guys, but they should be good enough to win that division based on just how good their overall team is. So yeah, Clemson, North Carolina, and Charlotte for me. What about you? Am I going out on a limb here, Greg?
No, I think that's about as close to a lock as you're going to get. Nothing's 100%. Who knows what happens? You know, our old buddy John, you know, he said, hey, all it takes is one injury to our signal caller and you know, all bets are off for North Carolina. Well, you know, the same for a lot of teams, but he's right. I mean, you know, you can't. Yeah. I was hoping, and you know, me and John were talking, we were both hoping, you know, Bojangles used to do that deal where they were trying to sell tickets to the ACC championship game in August. You know, they're trying to sell as many tickets as possible just on the promise. You know, you buy them on the promise that the team that you want's there. And they used to sell, it was like 4 tickets and then like a hat and like a $20 Bojangles gift card for $100. You know,
because
you never know, you might buy these tickets and then realize you have no interest in who ends up playing in
Charlotte. But you're only out $100.
You're only out $100. So that's why a lot of times, you know, people would do it. But I was really hoping for that this year because I'm like, that's going to be a tough ticket. They're not doing it this year. they figure they don't need to. They see the writing on the wall too.
It will be a sellout because it's in North Carolina and Clemson's just 2 hours down the road.
Right. It's almost halfway between.
It really is.
It's pretty darn close to halfway.
It's probably, 2.5 hours to Chapel Hill from Charlotte?
Yeah, about 2.5 to Chapel Hill and about.
And then 2 to Clemson.
Two and a quarter, probably. Yeah, it's really close to halfway.
Because Clemson's an hour from where I live and I'm an hour from Charlotte. So
correct.
Yeah,
but yeah, look. I'm looking, Blake. I think Clemson, I haven't seen the Vegas odds. I put Clemson as 10.5 wins. Over under.
Yes.
I think it's entirely possible Clemson loses a tough game to Georgia. I don't think Clemson gets blown out, but I think Clemson could lose that game for sure. And then maybe another game along the way, just, you know, who knows what happens.
I think they're an 11-1 team going into Charlotte. I don't know who that loss will be to. I think they'll be 11-1 team.
Well, I mean, it almost has to be Georgia.
They'll be in the playoffs. I mean, yeah. it's one of those things. Clemson's they're at a place now to where you have a mulligan. And if you went out, if you go 11-1 and win your conference, or I'm sorry, 12-1 and win your conference, you're going to be in the playoff. That's just, and it's going to be even different when we get to a 12-team playoff, because that's going to make things really interesting.
So, I'm in agreement with you about the Coastal. I think North Carolina is the best team, not only for the reasons that you mentioned. Yeah, they take a step back probably in the running game, but you've got a senior in Sam Howell, who, like you said, is the best quarterback in the ACC. He may be. One of the best, he may be the best in the country, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and actually, Greg, he's a junior.
He's a junior. This is his fourth year, isn't it? His redshirt.
No. Well, he may have redshirted his freshman year. He may have redshirted his freshman year.
Okay. Hey. Was he a freshman when Clemson went to Chapel Hill and almost got beat?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I was thinking he was sophomore. So, all right. Well, anyway, another year of experience for him. But then also, one thing about UNC. And this is kind of one of those intangible arguments, but they have a lot of momentum. They're getting better every year. The fan base is getting more excited. The players, you can tell that the energy is rising every year. And I think that does mean something.
Yes.
And I think North Carolina, their schedule is a little bit tough. From the Atlantic, they draw Florida State and Wake. But that's not even a conference game, by the way, the Wake game.
Yes, doesn't count. Yes.
But they also draw Notre Dame. They go to Notre Dame. So that's tough. And the Coastal, as far as everybody else, you know as well as I do, the meat of the Coastal is impossible to predict year in and year out. you have a bunch of teams that'll probably end up being 4-4 like usual, just right in the middle, and it's really tough to rank them. But I don't know, man. A lot of people are talking about Miami. I'm not sure.
Miami, you never know. For me, with Miami, it is they got to show me, because they haven't. And until they show me, I can't pick them.
I'm exactly but the same way.
They had the talent to do it. It's just I can't pick them until they do it,
Blake.
Because they just
this is one of those. It. You know, we always do these hypotheticals where if you had to bet your house, this would be the easiest house betting bet I've ever made. Where if they said you had to bet
where
your house
in Florida, I'm sorry, Clemson, North Carolina.
Yeah, who's going to be in Charlotte in December? Yeah, I mean, that's the easiest house betting. Not to say that's 100% going to happen, but I can't imagine many people not picking either of these teams or both of these teams to be in it. So let's talk about who's going to surprise and who's going to disappoint. You can go anywhere you want with this. If you want to go disappoint first, surprise first.
I'm going to say Wake Forest in the Atlantic Division, because I like Dave Clawson a lot as a coach. And last year, they seemed to be better than I thought they would be. And they just beat – I mean, they doubled Wisconsin's yards in the bowl game.
Yep.
I mean, so this team's got momentum. A lot of guys back from last year with Dave Clawson. Wake Forest is the kind of team that – to me, they could surprise. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but they could win 8 games, maybe. I think they're that kind of team. And Wake Forest usually doesn't win 8 games, so, or 7 even. So I'm thinking, for me, Wake Forest could be a surprise team in that division. In the Coastal Division, Greg, it's more of a crapshoot, because they're all surprise teams in a lot of ways to me. If I had to say a surprise team in that division,
I wasn't even going to do a surprise in each division. Oh, I was just going to do one overall surprise and one overall disappointment.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to do one surprise. It's going to be Wake Forest. I'm just going to say Wake Forest because they're coaching and the fact that they have the Wake Forest way of doing things, and I think that's a pretty good way.
Well,
I'm going to Wake Forest.
That's actually what my pick was going to be. I was going to pick Wake Forest, not only for the reasons that you mentioned, and you mentioned spanking Wisconsin in the bowl game, which actually is more impressive than maybe they got credit for. Because Wisconsin's always tough year in and year out. And
last year without Sage Surratt, too. Remember, he was hurt.
That's right.
And he was their best player. He was their best receiver last year. And he missed most of the season, if not all. Oh, he opted out.
Yeah, yeah.
He opted out, so they didn't have Sage Surratt, who was their best receiver, and they still did it. So, yeah,
Dave
Foss is a great coach, by the way.
You said they might win 8 games. Blake, they might start 8-0, actually. If you look at their schedule, all right. Who's going to be their toughest opponent in the first 8 games? They got Old Dominion, Norfolk State, Florida State.
Probably at Virginia.
At Virginia, Louisville, at Syracuse, at West Point, and Duke.
Yeah, well, and also Louisville could be a tough home game. But I think they'll probably be more likely 7-1 out of that stretch, maybe 6-2. But I can see them beating – the only team I really think is probably a guaranteed loss is Clemson, because it's there. And North Carolina's going to be a tough one to win, too, at North Carolina.
Well, here's the thing about Wake. As we know, they're usually pretty tough on the surface, but as the season wears on, they have depth issues and they wear down. But that kind of works for them this year, because their tougher games are at the end of the season anyway. Yep. Games they may not win anyway. Their last 4 games are at UNC, NC State at home, at Clemson, and at Boston College.
Yeah. And that's one where they'd be tickled pink to go 2-2.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Definitely.
And 1-3 wouldn't be terrible.
No.
In that stretch, Greg.
No. If they go 7-1 their first 8 games, and then win one of those 8 wins, that's a great season for them.
You go to a good bowl game. So I think Wake Forest too.
But I'm with you. I like their coaching. They're a little more experienced this year. If they can avoid the injury bug, if a couple guys get hurt, then all bets are off. Because like we said, they do have depth issues. But I'm on the Wake train this year for surprise team. I don't think they'll challenge for the Atlantic, but I do think they could be poised to win 8, maybe 9 games this year, and that'd be a great season for Wake Forest. All right, Blake, who's going to disappoint?
Oh, me. Man, I hate to do this, but I was going to say Miami, because they typically do, but that's kind of a lazy selection, frankly. Greg, I'm going to tell you, never mind. I was going to say, I'm going to take Miami. Just because I think they have a lot of talent, and I think Derek King's a good quarterback. But at the end of the day, man, until they do it, like, they always seem to have big expectations and seem to, you know, you crap the bed, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So until they show me otherwise, I'm going to say this another – I mean, a team that some people say should win their division, I think it's an 8-4 kind of team. And that's not a bad record, but it's just – I don't see Miami as the kind of team that – they're not there where they can go play on the road in a Virginia or a Pitt and guarantee a win. That's 50-50 to me still. So until you can make, you know, get the point to where that's almost a guaranteed win, it's hard for me to predict you to win a division. And Miami, I mean, for me, Miami, just until they show me that they are changed as a culture. I mean, you know, the program changes a culture.
And that takes a long time. It
takes a long time, man. And I think their culture, a lot like the culture of Tennessee, is really in a bad place. So I'm going to say Miami.
Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb. I agree with you. I'm going to go NC State.
I thought about picking NC State, but because of one reason, and you know who that is.
What?
Doran.
Well, yes. So
I just don't think he's a good guy. I'm not a big fan of
him. It was funny because a couple weeks ago I went back and looked, and Doran reminds me a lot of the Tommy Bowden years at Clemson, where it doesn't seem to matter what he has. There's that ceiling he can't. You know, the seven, eight wins or so, it's kind of where, you know, it doesn't even matter what kind of talent.
Yes.
If you go back and look, the year that State had, what, 6-7 guys drafted?
2017.
Now, I know Bama a lot of times has 6 guys drafted in the first round or two, but NC State
had a lot of talent that year.
Right.
They had a lot of talent.
Eight wins. I think 9 if you include the bowl, but 8 wins in the regular season. And I'm like, man, they just can't seem to get over that hump.
They had guys like they had Finley at quarterback, and they had Hines at running back, and they had Jalen Samuels playing running back receiver. They had the kid Harmon play receiver, who's playing in the NFL right now, and they had another kid named Myers at receiver. I can't remember his first name. Jacoby Myers, I think his name was. He was a good player. They had weapons defensively. They had Bradley Chubb, Street, these guys on defense that were they were all in the NFL right now, by the way. They had those guys, and they only
eight
went,
wins.
Eight.
Now, regular
season. They couldn't beat us. They couldn't beat us that year. And, I mean, we were okay.
Was that the first or second game of the season?
That was the opening game. Of course, we had Debo Samuel healthy and all that. He got hurt later in the year. But they outplayed us, but yet we found a way to win the game.
I think this is a make it or break it year for Dave Doran. At least I hope it is, because he's been at NC State for, this is his ninth season.
Yeah, but if he goes crazy. 7-5, they're not going to fire him.
How many years do you put up with 7-5 before you realize that that's the ceiling? Some schools, I think you'd be okay with it. I just don't know if NC State. I don't think NC State's got delusions that they should be in the title hunt every year.
In who you beat. If you beat North Carolina 7-5, he's safe.
Yeah, but they ain't beating North Carolina. In fact,
I don't think so either.
All right, I'm looking at their schedule right now. First of all, they have a tough game at Mississippi State week 2, which that's tough. Leach might throw
Mike
all
Leach
over.
In his second year of the system with a spring to practice.
Correct,
by the way.
Correct. And also, they got to go to Mississippi State. That's a long way to travel.
A lot of cowbells.
Yes. Not only that,
Clemson's a loss,
but out of the coastal, they face the two toughest teams. They go to Miami, and of course, they always play UNC
in North Carolina.
By the way, it's at home, but it's over Thanksgiving on a Friday over Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Students won't be around. So I don't know if home field advantage really means that much for that particular time slot. They go or date, I should say. They go to Wake. I don't know about that one. And then they have, they go to Boston College. They should win.
Hey, that's a tough game. I think that's a tough game at Boston.
Well, it depends if it's Red Bandana Night or not, but yeah.
Well, if it's Red Bandana Night, they're losing. So there's no even,
They got Louisville at home. That's a good break for them.
I think Louisville could be tricky. Tech at home could be, because Skip Holtz has done a decent, is Skip Holtz still there?
I think so. Yeah.
He's done a decent job there. And that's not a gimme. You know what I mean? I think the win, but those games can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. As a South Carolina fan, I can attest to, by the way.
But a lot of people are saying NC State's the second best team in the Atlantic behind Clemson.
I think it's Wake Forest.
I think you might see NC State with another 7-5 year. I mean, Blake, is it really outside the realm of possibilities that they could lose to Mississippi State? They lose to Clemson. They lose to Wake. They lose to UNC and then Miami. Like, those are very reasonable games that they could lose. And that's a 7-5 team for this team that supposedly got momentum, and Dave Doran's here for his ninth year. It's hard to believe. Jeez. It seems like he just came along 4 or 5 years ago. He replaced O'Brien, and he's a facsimile of O'Brien. He's boring, and he wins 7 games a year. I mean, that's exactly what O'Brien
But did. I think Doran, man, I'm going to say this. I'm not a big fan of his, but I think he's done a pretty good job evaluating talent because they haven't recruited that great under him as far as, like,
he develops
rankings
well,
go.
To, yeah.
But I think he's done a good job evaluating talent and developing talent. I think he's done a pretty good job of that, so I got to give him credit for that. I just don't know that he can win the big game.
Yeah, you just want to see that translate to W's at some point.
Yeah.
It hasn't yet. Well, okay, what else do you have to say? What else is there to say about the ACC this year, Blake? I mean, is that...
Well, we'll know a lot more when the season starts, obviously, but I'll say this. I think Sam Howell's the best quarterback in the league. I think as far as other star players, I'm going to say this. It's going to be interesting to see how Justin Ross plays coming back from his injury, because for Clemson, Justin Ross, him coming back is a big deal if he's healthy, by the way. That's a big deal, I think, because Justin Ross is a legit.
He's awesome.
He's those kind of guys, and they're hard to find. You know, South Carolina, we had Alshon Jeffrey and Sidney Rice were like this, and Clemson, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and. But the guys who don't have to be open to be open, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a quarterback like DJ Ugalele, is that how you say it?
No.
Okay.
No. Uiagalelei.
Man, I'm not saying that.
Uiagalelei. So that's 1, 2, 3.
DJ Ugalele. I'm gonna call him that.
Man, that's six syllables. Six syllable last name.
It's just too much. It's just too much. It's a heck of a security blanket to have a guy like that, because if you're in trouble and he's man-to-man, be covered like a blanket. I'm saying he's 6'4 and got great ball skills. I can just throw it up to him.
Yeah.
And you guys did that with Mike Williams too some back in the day. But so he
did a lot with Mike
back,
Williams.
Yeah. I mean, him coming back is huge for you guys. I think for North Carolina, I'm interested to see how this new look defensive line plays, because they've been recruiting really well and the defense has been kind of below average. But I think it'll be a lot better this year. Florida State with Norvell, how's that going to look? Because I love Norvell as a coach, and I think if they're patient with him, he will win. It's just be patient. He's in a really tough spot in the middle of a pandemic too, by the way. So he's had to really navigate a bunch of stuff. And Taggart destroyed that program, along with Jimbo a little bit too. But Taggart really did a terrible job with that program and really, I think, damaged it. It's going to take Norvell a few years to build it back. But if they give him time, I think Norvell will. I think he's a smart guy.
Definitely growing pains.
Hey, great Georgia Tech. How will they respond?
I think
Jeff Collins' third year.
I actually almost picked Georgia Tech for a surprise team because I think they're actually going to be pretty solid. But I looked at their schedule.
And
they have a tough schedule.
So much better.
They have a tough schedule this year.
But they're recruiting a lot better than they did before when they had Johnson, who had terrible classes. Justin Fuente, his future. This is a make or break year for him, I think.
Probably.
Georgia Tech. Pitt is Pitt. Narduzzi's Narduzzi.
Big question mark.
They'll win 7 games, though. They just
at least
win 7 games.
Yeah.
So I just figure they will. Boston College, I think they'll be a seven-game win team. I like their new coach. If on Red Bandana night, they will win that game whenever that is.
As long as it's night and not Red Bandana afternoon.
Yeah, that was so stupid they did that. And plus, you know, doing it in a COVID years it was kind of like a mulligan to me, because – the fans aren't there like they normally were. And Massachusetts was way more strict about fans than they were down south, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
So they didn't have the kind of atmosphere you want for Red Bandana night. And if they have it this year in a full stadium, I don't care who they play, they're winning. So make sure you sit that against a good team,
you know,
Boston College.
I almost talked about Duke as a surprise team because they looked so bad last year. But one thing that if you watched Duke last year, first of all, sorry, because it was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was.
Duke had – like they had like 4 or 5 turnovers almost every game. I mean, it was bad. And you have to think, first of all, you're not winning any games hardly if you have 4 or 5 turnovers a game. It doesn't really matter who you play. And you have to think they're not going to turn the ball over that much this year. The ball, it has to bounce the other way at least somewhat this year.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be in contention for the Coastal by any means, but you might see a 4 or 5 win Duke team doubling last year's win total. That'd be pretty good for Clawson
and
Durham.
And I mean, and you got to figure David Cutcliffe coach team will be better.
That's what I meant.
Because
I said
David
Clawson,
Cutcliffe is a very good coach.
Yeah.
And I know he's getting older, but he still knows football. Ask Eli Manning if he's a good coach. And Peyton Manning too, because he coached him at Tennessee. As far as it goes, Greg, just looking at it as a whole, I think we kind of covered a lot of it. I think Clemson's the overwhelming favorite to win the conference and the championship game. UNC second behind them. Good if that miss crapshoot. I think I don't know.
If the season transpires the way you and I and probably most people think it will, and we see Clemson and UNC in Charlotte, I think that is going to be a heck of a ball game. Because don't forget, we I already brought this up, but don't forget how that game ended in Chapel Hill a couple years ago, the last time these two teams played. Carolina outplayed Clemson that game for most of the game.
And those guys believe they can win that game.
Correct. Now
that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
The psychological hurdle is more or less removed because they know they can hang with Clemson now. And you know, Clemson wins a lot of games when they get off the bus at this point.
Yes.
That's not going to be the case.
Sam Howell, to me, has some Baker Mayfield in him.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way he plays, he reminds me of Mayfield a lot because he may not be quite as elusive as Baker Mayfield was, but I think he throws the best deep ball of anybody in the country. He just has so much touch and accuracy. His receivers are newer because they lost a couple guys, but when you have a quarterback like that, he can make guys who aren't as good better. I worry about the running game, obviously, because they lost Carter and lost Williams, who was probably the best running back duo in the country last year. When you really think back, that 2,000-yard rushers.
Yeah.
Pretty darn good. You know, those guys are both playing on Sundays now. So, but it's just, can they get over the hump and beat Clemson? Because Clemson, I just would be stunned if Clemson is not in that game in December. I'll be really shocked because I don't see Clemson losing a game in the ACC. Maybe one just random game if something breaks
that, but
goes
that
the wrong way.
Yeah, that shouldn't cost them.
But that
still
should keep you out, though. Mm-hmm. And I think Clemson will probably beat Georgia, and some people don't agree with me on that. And the reason I say that real quickly is because I look at who's coaching. You got Dabo Sweeney, who's been there and done it, and Kirby Smart has wet the bed and given the chance. So until he doesn't wet the bed, hark me to pick him, right?
Interesting.
Because with Miami, I'm saying I can't pick Miami to win because they haven't done it with Kirby Smart. It's like Kirby Smart has not won the big game yet. So until he wins that big game, how can I pick him to beat Clemson? A team with a coaching staff who's been there, done that, I think that's important because mindset's important. So I think Clemson will go 11-1 and probably, and of course, if they win the conference and go 12-1, they will be in the playoff. So in the North Carolina, I think they'll be there at 10-2. And if they beat Clemson 11-2, they won't get in because 11-2 is not good enough. But if they go 12-1, could they get in? Maybe. It's going to be tougher for them at 12-1 to get in than Clemson because Clemson's been there before.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
No. I think we've got a pretty good finger on the pulse, probably the ACC. Yeah. Not the Coastal, because we never do and nobody ever does.
No.
But for the most part, I think we do. Let's shift to the SEC, Blake.
All right.
Who do we like? I shouldn't say that. Who do we think will win each division?
Well, let's see. Hang on, man.
Not necessarily who we like.
Let's see here. Well, obviously, to me, I think for most people, the SEC is the same as the ACC as far as I think the overwhelming consensus is Bama, Georgia, and Atlanta. I think that's the overwhelming consensus. Now, I think in the East, I think Georgia is definitely the team to beat in the East because Florida lost a lot of guys off that team they had last year who won the division. They lost Trask. They lost Grimes. They lost the other receiver, Tony, they lost a lot of guys on defense. So, to me, Florida, it's going to be tough for them to compete with Georgia, who has a lot of guys back. And I think Georgia, Greg, if you look at Georgia, I think Georgia may have the most talented roster in the country. If you look at their roster, it is unbelievable. But there's something missing there. And I just think – I'm sorry, Kirby Smart, but I just don't if Georgia had a – try to think of a coach that would a Dan Mullen. How good would they be with a Dan Mullen? Sorry, LSU Bill. I know you're the biggest Dan Mullen fan, but I think Dan Mullen's a great coach. But I don't think he's going to overcome the talent gap. Between Florida and Georgia and JT Daniels at Georgia, he played pretty well last year. If he can build on that, I think he could be even better this year. And they haven't had a franchise quarterback, Greg, since Matt Stafford. So they need a franchise quarterback because you know what? The teams who win it usually have a franchise quarterback.
Correct.
That's just kind of the way, whether it's Tua Tagovailoa or whether it's Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow. The teams that win it, and Mac Jones was sort of that. He was right there, you know. It's hard to win it unless you're Bama. It's hard to win it without a franchise quarterback. So they need to have Daniels have a great year. But I still think they'll win the division. Of course, Bama in the West – What do you think? Is that pretty?
I mean, I think
easy to you. It's pretty easy to me.
This is another one. You know, if a gun to your head, you have to bet your house. This is the obvious choice. Bama's a pretty obvious choice year in and year out to come out of the West. Of course, a couple years ago, that wasn't the case. When LSU had maybe the greatest college team ever put together.
Yeah.
But year in and year out, Bama's a safe bet. I don't see any, you know, Blake, kind of like what you said with Miami, they have to prove it. It's sort of the opposite with Bama. You have to have a reason to not, you know, as default, not have them in that position. And like you said, in the East, Georgia is the most.
I just think they're head and shoulders.
They're the most talented team. And
I mean, I just don't think it's that close, Greg. I'm looking and I just don't think it's that close.
Despite the deficiencies on the sidelines, and I agree with you on that, despite those deficiencies, I don't see Florida taking the East, and I guess the only other team that would probably be anywhere close would be Kentucky, and I don't see them taking the East.
No, I don't either. And that's, to me, I mean, I'm never going to count Dan Mullen out because he's a great coach, and he has a new quarterback. Jones, is that the kid's name? Yeah, Jones. And he maybe fits more what Dan Mullen wants to do, but Kyle Trask was a really good quarterback. And he put the ball. I mean, when he was given the chance. I mean, he was behind De'Aaron King in high school. As crazy as it is. But he was a backup quarterback for De'Aaron King in high school, and he was barely recruited. And Florida took a flyer on him, and it worked out for him. But but as far as you know, Greg, surprise teams. Watch LSU this year.
Interesting.
Watch LSU this year because they got a ton of guys back. They got a ton of talent as always. And they got A&M at home. I think they could bounce back and win 9 games this year. Maybe even 10 if things break right. A&M's another team, Greg, that they keep getting better and better.
This is make it or break it for
A&M this
year.
I think it is, too, because I think this is a good football team. They lost Kellen Mond, but I think the other guy's just as good as Kellen Mond was. As far as other surprise teams go, I look at it. Maybe Mississippi State, maybe with Leach's second year in the system. Maybe Ole Miss with Kiffin, because those guys are offensive guys, get another year in the system. Maybe as far as disappointing teams, Greg, for me, Auburn just really jumped off the page. I don't know about that for you. I don't like their coaching hire. I don't think he fits necessarily the SEC. I think he's and then he hired Mike Bobo to run his offense. I mean, Bobo's a blithering moron. I just never understood his – I've never understood the love fest for him as an offensive coordinator when he's never done it. I never thought he's very good at that. I've just never thought he's a very – has his finger on the pulse of what it takes to run a good offense. They're going to find out the hard way, I think. But to fire Malzahn and hire this guy, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well – I feel like they felt like they had to fire Malzahn, and then of course you have to hire somebody.
But you better be able to find a better replacement in my book. If you're gonna fire somebody, you better
upgrade.
Sure. They did, and I think the whole plan was. I heard the plan was to fire Malzahn and heck promote Steele. You heard that? Kevin Steele was gonna be the guy they wanted to promote. And the fans said no.
No.
So they kind of pretty much kiboshed that. But
well. And it doesn't make sense in this day and age, even if Kevin Steele was a great defensive coordinator, which a lot of people might argue, but it doesn't make sense in this day and age to have a defensive guy when everything's shifting towards more offense. You don't want to be the team that's moving backwards or sort of against
the grain.
Unless you
have a defensive guy that is totally hands-off and has a coordinator who – but those guys can't do it, man. He's a South Carolina fan. We have Will Muschamp. You know, he has never in his career as a coach made the right hire for offense, never once. And you got to think – it's something that you got to actually luck into it, but he never understood it enough. He couldn't get past his own way. Like, I got to hire a guy to run my offense, and you know, Greg, we're going to spend money, and I'm going to give him total control. He can never do that. He can never do that. And if you don't do that nowadays, you can't get the franchise quarterback. If you can't get the franchise quarterback, it's hard to win a championship. So,
fair enough. But we talk about surprise teams and disappointing teams. It's funny you mentioned Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I kind of want to package them in. I want to just say the state of Mississippi is my surprise team for this year. I don't have any delusions that either of them are going to challenge for the West, but I do think that they're probably going to be the best, 8-7 win team. You know, kind of how they do if they get to that point. You know how, and they year in and year out, it seems like they are. They're right around a lot of times 6-6, but you're like, I don't want to play them. You know, I don't want to play them in the bowl. They're probably the best 6-6 team. I think we'll experience something like that this year. Like you said, Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, second year, got that spring to practice, particularly Mississippi State with Mike Leach. That's a tough system. You need a year or two to get that in place. Yes. And I think the cupboard is a little fuller at Ole Miss than Mississippi State anyway.
I do too.
But
I think Leach's system is so unique.
Yeah.
That if he has time, and Leach is the kind of guy that I don't want to bet against him, because everywhere he's been, he's been successful. But it takes a couple of years to get a system in place, because they do the wide splits blocking. They you know, the receivers, I mean, their route concept's a little bit different, what they do. But once they get that down, watch out for them. They'll never be more – it's going to be hard in the West to win more than 8 games for Mississippi State or Ole Miss. It's going to be really hard.
Sure, yeah.
But heck, if you're Mississippi State, you're going 7-5, 8-4 every year. Pretty darn good.
It's great. In the toughest division in college football.
Yes.
Great.
And also, don't forget, Ole Miss has, I think, the best quarterback in the SEC, Matt Corral. I think he's the best quarterback in the SEC.
He
so you have the best quarterback coming back for your team. Yeah, you're right. I like that pick, Greg.
As far as disappointing teams, I don't want to say Texas A&M, because disappointing is probably too strong of a word. I think a lot of people are seeing what A&M has and kind of seeing the way things are shaking out, and they're saying, this is our year. We paid Jimbo. Mm-hmm. How long has he been in A&M now? He's been for four years? This is his fourth year.
$75 million. Was it $75 million?
It was $100, wasn't it? It was $100 for 10 years.
It was a ton of money.
No, that was Gruden. Yeah, I think it was $75 million. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But so if you're doing the math, if they paid him $7.5 million, this is his fourth year. All right, Blake, we're talking, they paid him $30 million by the end of this season. People in College Station want to see something to show for that $30 million they pumped into Jimbo Fisher. A lot of people are saying this is the year where it's not necessarily make it or break it, like he's going to be fired, but like this is the year they really want to see A&M contend. Yes. I'm just not so sure it's going to happen, just because A&M is a darn good team, don't get me wrong, but I don't know when you're in a conference like a division like the SEC West, when you face the LSUs and Bamas, and even the slip-up teams like the Ole Miss and Mississippi State week in and week out. Let's see, from the East, they draw South Carolina. That's good for them. Sorry, brother. And Missouri, which is probably good for them, too.
But their schedule, though, if you look at their schedule, it's pretty darn works for them pretty well, because they could be playing Bama. They should be playing Bama 5-0 at home.
Right.
If they win that game, all bets are off.
Correct.
But they got to win that game.
Correct. And they can't slip up somewhere else, which Jimbo has been known to do from time to time.
And here's a problem for A&M. If you lose to Bama, you're 5-0 lose to Bama, you got to go right back to Missouri on the road. And that's not an easy place to play.
No,
So you lose that game, and then you have a week off. South Carolina should be a win. You got a week off. You got Auburn should be a win. And you got at Ole Miss. That's a tricky game, by the way. And then of course, at LSU to end the season, which is a tough game, obviously.
Very, very tricky game.
But I think they are a 9-3, 10-2 type team based on what I see.
Is 9-3 or 10-2 good enough for the A&M fan base? I don't know. But they're actually
to keep
not,
Jimbo?
Well, not necessarily to keep Jimbo, but to keep the natives happy.
Here's the thing, Greg. If it ain't, then you're in trouble, because if you think 9-3 or 10-2 in the toughest division of football, if you think that's a letdown, then you're an unrealistic fan base.
It's not necessarily a letdown. It's more like I think they want to see progress. They want to see
depends on what you define as progress.
Correct. Progress is different for different teams, obviously. But I think, you know, A&M's they've had seasons where they've won 9-10 games under Jimbo. They kind of want to see, like, hey, can we make that next step? Can we get to that point where we're in legitimate competition for the West, and that we can, you know, we're getting to the point where we're heading to the playoffs, or maybe challenging for the playoffs.
But for them, the Bama game is huge. That is huge for them, I think, because they'll be undefeated and probably a top – I say undefeated, maybe not, but probably undefeated top five team.
I mean, if they're not undefeated, then I don't know that it really matters that much. I think they have to be undefeated going into
that game.
Well,
if they have one loss and they can beat Bama, then I think it – you know. But that's a huge game. Bama's a huge game for them, because it kind of points towards the future of, hey, what can we be? But even if they lose to Bama and lose a couple more, go 9-3. I mean, yeah, you're a little disappointed, but 9-3 is still a darn good season. I think they could be a 10-2 team as well. So I'm not.
But actually, I was going to go as far as disappointing, and I don't know if this.
Yeah, we're off on a tangent.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't know if this fits the definition of disappointment, but I was actually going to piggyback on your Auburn pick because I don't know what the expectations are out of Auburn, but I have a sneaking feeling that they're not going to meet those expectations, whatever they are, for the reasons that you said. I'm unsure about the coaching hire. I am sure that Mike Bobo ain't the guy because he's never been the guy anywhere he's been.
No.
And put that all together. And put together just even if you have a home run hire, you're going to have some growing pains right out of the gate. And by the way, they're in the toughest division in college football.
Yeah.
Where it seems like pretty much.
Oh, and also, by the way, Greg, they're a common opponent from the east of Georgia.
Georgia.
So that makes it really tough. That is one of the toughest jobs in the country because when you play in that division and you have a fan base and you're in the same state as Alabama, you have a fan base that is really hungry to win, and your common opponent in the East is Georgia. That's a tough, tough draw.
A common opponent in the East is Georgia. And then also this year, Blake, they go to Columbia to face your Chickens, which as much of a pushover as you might think that your Chickens are going to be, I don't know, but it is in Columbia, So if Auburn goes 0-2,
we beat them last year.
Yeah, if Auburn goes 0-2 in the East from their Eastern opponents, Blake, God, look at this. They go to Penn State week 3.
Come on, really? Dude.
Yeah, to Penn State week 3, and they draw Georgia out of the East. That is a brutal, brutal schedule.
Jeez. And then, Greg, not only that, but you're Auburn, and you go to Penn State, to LSU, to A&M in South Carolina, but at home you got Georgia. And Ole Miss and Mississippi State are not pushover games.
No, they're not.
They're not pushover games, and they better be careful. In fact, they'll split those two games. They will not win both those games. They'll split them. They'll probably lose to Penn State, probably lose LSU. I mean, I'm looking at best 7-5 kind of team.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it could be 6-6.
They won 6 games last year. I know last year was a weird year.
Yeah, 6-4, I guess.
6-5 last year.
They lost their bowl game.
Yeah. Blake, I'm going to say Auburn is not bowl bound this year. That's just my. I'm going to go out on a limb. 5-7 is Auburn's ceiling this year for me. They beat Acorn/Akron. They beat Alabama State. They beat Georgia State.
And then they split Ole Miss,
Mississippi State,
and maybe beat South Carolina,
and that might
or
be
maybe a, beat Arkansas or something.
Arkansas. That's probably going to be it for Auburn.
Yeah, because I don't see them beating LSU, Bama, or A&M or Penn State. I just don't see them winning any of those games. So that's 4 right there. And then you got a lot of toss up games too to me, like Mississippi, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and that South Carolina is I think that's a 50-50 game too. So now, we'll see how the season plays out. Greg, it could be a thing where they, because this Tank Bigsby kid is really good at running back. I give him that, but I'm not a big believer in Bo Nix either, and that's part of the problem with me. I don't think he's that great. They got this kid that's a transfer from LSU, TJ Finley, who played there last year. He might be the better option than Bo Nix, actually. But they're not going. They're going to play Bo Nix because Bo Nix has. He is what do you call it? A legacy.
A legacy, yes.
His dad played there.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. And I just never have been a big Bo Nix guy. I think he's just too erratic.
He was hyped a little bit in his first game.
He's a 5-star.
Who was that first game against? It was a
Oregon.
High profile game, and he looked good. And I think the hype train got running and
he hasn't got any better.
And it outpaced him.
Yeah, he has not gotten any better.
Right. So I think he was sort of a victim of his own success, not only from the early hype, but also that first game. People were like, he's really good. And he never really lived up to that after that, I think. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a long year for Auburn. It might be a long couple of years for Auburn based on all the things we just said, most notably the coaching changes and whether that was the right decision or not. But, yeah, man, I think it's pretty cut and dry as far as who the favorites are in these two divisions.
Yeah.
You know me, and you're the same way. I hate to just cookie cutter and say the obvious. I like to go out on a limb, but I just don't. I can't justify going out on a limb in either division. I just can't make the argument.
Yep.
I think Kentucky might be a little better this year than people are predicting. Just because, kind of like I mentioned with North Carolina, they seem to have some momentum. You know, they seem to be getting a little bit better every year. All the crap I've given the Stoops family over the years, maybe it's not all deserved. Most of it is.
No.
But it's not all deserved. Mark Stoops has actually done, Mark, Mike, Mac, Mick, whichever one this is, I think it's Mark.
Yeah.
He's actually done a good job at Kentucky. I was not a believer until a couple of years ago, Blake, when they beat Virginia Tech in Bud Foster's last game. With that guy who, what was his name? He wasn't even a
quarterback. Lynn Bowden.
Bowden.
Bowden. What do they call him? Bowden.
But he wasn't even a quarterback, but he ran roughshod all over him. And I'm like, this is, you know what's going to happen. You know what they're going to do with this guy. Bud Foster, you're one of the best defensive coordinators ever. You know what's going to happen. Surely you can stop this. And he couldn't. And I thought, I'm going to give Kentucky more credit.
What Stoops did that I'm pretty impressed with, and he's an Ohio guy, Mark Stoops. What he did was Kentucky – you know, the state of Kentucky does not produce much talent. They just don't. So you got to recruit elsewhere. And what Stoops did is he started going into Ohio and getting these kids that maybe Ohio State would tell them, hey, kind of wait on us for an offer. We might want you. Because Ohio State recruits national. We know that. But a lot of good players in Ohio, and Michigan State used to come down there and do that. And when Kentucky started beating Michigan State at their own game, you've seen Michigan State slide since then, because Kentucky's going to Ohio now, getting a lot of these kids, and then they'll spot recruit the Carolinas, they'll spot recruit Georgia, spot recruit Florida. He's figured out a way to be competitive up there. And I give him a lot of credit for that, because that's not easy to do, and he has a system in place to where they try to be strong on the lines of scrimmage, kind of Big Ten football-ish, sort of. And it works. It works for Kentucky because their fans are pretty excited to go 7-5, 8-4.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't blame them because they're a basketball school, A, and B, you know, 7-5, 8-4 every year. And heck, they've been beating Tennessee's brains out every year lately. They've been beating a lot of teams they used to not beat. So they've got a pretty darn good program, Greg.
Beating their brains out. I like that expression.
Yeah. You know, and of course, Tennessee is a mess.
Oh, God. Well, Blake, I tell you what, let's talk a little bit about your chickens. You can say whatever it is that's on your mind. Because I don't want to talk about Clemson because I think, you know, I don't know.
It's old hat for you to be good.
Well,
top 14.
It's old hat, but I don't want to give the impression it loses its spice because it doesn't. Trust me, Blake, I wake up most days with a smile on my face. If I'm not waking up at 4 a.m. to get pooped on, I'm waking up most days with a smile on my face just knowing, because I remember the harder times, but enough has been said about Clemson.
Bad year for Clemson is a 10-2 would be a bad year. And if you have a bad year at 10-2, your life's pretty good as a fan.
Yeah.
You know, so I will say this.
I had a couple of experiences, and I told you about this. We were fortunate to have a family member of ours babysit our son for a weekend so we could kind of go, take a weekend for us. We hadn't done that up until a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Western North Carolina, and listeners, if you're familiar with Western North, it's actually beautiful. You know, Asheville's beautiful. It's weird, but it's beautiful. Hendersonville's very nice as well. But the mountains up in Boone, we were in Blowing Rock. It's actually really nice out there. I really like it, especially in the summer. In the winter, I would not want to be out there. But anyway, we took a weekend and went out there and, we went to a couple of breweries. We went to a couple of restaurants, a few bars and that sort of thing. And me being the football junkie that I am, and kind of like you, of course, if I see somebody who's wearing something, I'll talk to them about their team or whoever. Mm-hmm. And I had struck up some conversations with some other casual fans. And of course, you always look for that reaction when you say that you're a Clemson fan, because people look at you like, are you really a Clemson fan? Are you a bandwagon fan?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was funny, Blake, because I know I told you this, but I had a couple of interactions with some fans, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn in any way, but I had two people tell me that, well, one person said I was the coolest Clemson fan they'd ever met. And I, that struck me.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, because you're not a douchebag. And I said, what? And so that bothered me, because I guess the fan, let's say the under 30 fan, doesn't really know much about Clemson struggling, has always sort of, you know, especially like the under 20 fan. Think about a 20-year-old Clemson fan right now, doesn't remember when Clemson wasn't in the national picture. You know what I mean? And then I had another Clemson fan, or another LSU fan, actually, and I really liked him. He was a cool guy. And he told me I was the most realistic Clemson fan he'd ever met, because I admitted openly that the SEC was far and away the better conference than the ACC, and that I was glad to be in the ACC rather than the SEC West. And it bothered me, because what that tells me is there are Clemson fans who genuinely believe, or at least convince themselves, that the ACC, especially the Atlantic, I assume, is on par with the West.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, Greg. I think Clemson fans, yeah, I mean, there's a douchebag element to a lot, because, you know, when you win and you're young and you win, you get that, you know, arrogance, it happens. But I'm going to tell you this. I think Clemson fans get annoyed because they get tired of other fans say, hey, look, you guys have an easy to go in your conference and you're not beat up like we are. We got this, you know, our league at the end of the season, we're beat up. You're not beat up because you play these sorry teams. And I think Clemson fans have a hard time with that. I think they have to defend themselves with that. My take on that is, okay, so what? I mean, that to me, it's like, I mean, if you're a fan or a coach or whatever, you want the path of least resistance, because your goal is win a championship.
Right.
Right? That's your goal.
There's nowhere on that trophy that talks about how beat up you were versus how beat up your opponents were that season. You just want the trophy.
You just want the trophy, and you want the easiest path to resistance. South Carolina fans, if we go independent and play 11 scrubs every year in Clemson, and if we happen to beat Clemson, we go to national championship or the playoffs, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because I don't win a championship. And we're not doing it in the SEC. It ain't happening.
So you think that comes from a little bit of insecurities as far
yes.
as you might be right. If somebody,
but I don't know, but who cares if?
Well, yeah. If somebody said that to me, if somebody said, yeah, well, Clemson. The only reason Clemson makes the playoffs is because they have a cupcake schedule for the most part, and blah blah blah. I'd say, yeah. Yeah, I do think Clemson and Dabo, I give him credit for this. I think that Clemson goes out of their way to schedule as good out of conference games as they can within reason. We always have the Georgia or an A&M, and we have the home and away with A&M, and we're playing Georgia, and
Oklahoma come up here in a few years.
Yeah, like right? 2035 or something. I don't know. It was pretty far down the line, but yeah, we typically try to and of course we have South Carolina we play every year,
and also too that makes your schedule worse than we're worse, because back years ago we were really good and it made you know it
right. But not only that, but I'd say, look, maybe that's true. And I shouldn't say maybe, that is true. If we were playing in the SEC, would we be in the playoffs every year? No, of course not. With the same teams that we've had? No, we'd still be pretty good, but we wouldn't be in the playoffs every year. But Blake, we still went to the national championship twice and beat Bama twice.
Yeah.
And beat a very good Bama team
and
a drum.
They can say that, yeah, and they can say that it's that yeah, Bama was beat up or whatever, and they went through the gauntlet, Clemson didn't. But it says a lot to me when you can, as a Clemson fan, yeah, we didn't play the schedule you guys did, but we're going to be up for that game, and we'll be ready to play no matter who we play. And that, to me, if you win, look, if you win the playoffs every year and you got hammered in the semifinals every year, and you rolled through the ACC and got hammered, it's one thing. But when you're winning the ACC every year and you're going to the playoffs and you're typically winning at least one game, sometimes two, that says to me that your coach is doing a pretty good job getting you ready for whatever you play. And you're beating Bama the 1 year you did like 45-17 or beat the piss out of them 1 year. I don't know what you can say if you're a Bama fan. Oh, you played a weaker schedule. Well, so what? They beat you.
Yeah, and it wasn't close, yeah.
Now, granted, it was one of those games where the ball bounced your way, but stuff like that happens.
I don't think if we play them 10 times, I don't think we get 10 similar scores.
I think it's 5-5.
Probably. I was going to say 6-4, but that might be a little generous. But speaking of which, I'm actually glad you mentioned this, because I do have to admit, I have to give Ohio State a lot of credit, because we haven't had a show since it's been a while since we've had a show. Ohio State spanked us.
Yes, they did.
They were better than – we were still in the game, but we weren't in the game. You know what I mean? At halftime, we were in the game, but even late, they were better than us. They spanked us. We don't get spanked very often, Blake, which is a good position to be in. We got spanked by LSU the previous year, which everybody
Your
did.
Your defense wasn't as good last year.
It wasn't, but Ohio State was – they were better than us, and they spanked us. Yep. And I got to really give them credit for that.
You, and they attacked you down the field.
They did. I can't – that's not one of those that I can say, oh, we had, you know, if the ball had bounced our way, or if we had just done this one or two thing different, yep. you know, we would have – nah, man, they spanked us. They you know, yep. they deserved – they earned the right to get spanked by Alabama yep. 10 days later. They earned that
yeah,
right.
That was just Bama being a lot better than everybody else. But, yeah, Ohio State had a heck of a year, and Justin Fields was a heck of a quarterback, and they did. They really beat the brakes off you guys.
And that doesn't happen very often. And when it does, you have to sort of say, okay.
I mean, I guess LSU the year before did that. But LSU beat the brakes off almost everybody the year before. So, I mean, that was just a special team. And
it was Ohio State's first time beating a team from South Carolina.
Yeah, so. And I've actually heard that. And it's, you know, it's interesting, though, when you think about it, that, you know, when you play Clemson as a fan, I look at Clemson when I play, you know, the way you play Clemson is you have to attack Clemson down the field. You have to attack them down the field because Clemson plays a lot of bump and run. They'll blitz a lot. So there's chances. Teams, if they get out of rhythm and try to be cute, Clemson will just swallow you because Clemson's always – there's nobody – Venables is the guy, the only guy around that is always blitzing somebody from somewhere. There's nobody else that does it like he does it. And a lot of times it may be two guys. It may be three guys. And you better be ready for that. But you also have to take chances. Because if you try to just play your game plan and let him rush four, then bring three from all different angles, you're done. You have to be able to. And Clemson has a unique ability also when they blitz to get to the quarterback. It's not like they blitz and they get kind of swallowed up. They blitz and guys are breaking free when they blitz. So you have to attack Clemson down the field. Ohio State did. If you don't, if you try to play Clemson straight up when they blitz like that, it's going to be a three and out or a turnover usually. So I think Ohio State had a great game plan. But, of course, against Bama, you know, it was kind of null and void because Bama was Bama. But, no, Clemson, I mean, Trevor Lawrence had a heck of a run, Greg. Yeah. He had a heck of a run.
But, you know, wait a minute. We started this conversation. I said I don't want to talk about Clemson, and then we just talked about Clemson for 10 minutes.
Yeah, we were talking about Clemson. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about your chickens. What do you – because, hey, new coach – you know, new identity.
And it is a new approach, a more Dabo-esque, Mac Brown-esque approach to how you do things, which I think we need a new approach because last one didn't work. But as far as South Carolina goes, Greg, I think you look at our offense and defense. I think on the lines of scrimmage, we're pretty darn good, actually. On the O-line and D-line, you can work with that. I think our running backs are going to be really good. I think our quarterback play is – that's a question mark, obviously. And our receivers, major question because we have a lot of new guys. We just don't know. Secondary is pretty iffy for me too. So I'm thinking we're a 5-7, maybe 6-6 type team. I think we could win. I think the ceiling is 7-5 if things were to break absolutely 100% right. And I think the floor is like a 4-8 type year if things really break the other way. But I think we're looking at 5-7, 6-6 type team.
What's success in your book?
I think a bowl would be great success. 6-6 would be super. 5-7 will be okay if you see things that you're like, okay, I like what we're doing here. Maybe it didn't. Maybe you lose a couple of close games to go 5-7. Yeah, I can live with that. But if we go 4-8 and we beat Eastern Illinois, Troy, Vandy, and then let's say Tennessee and lose everybody else, that's not a good year. But Shane Beamer needs, I think, you got to give him 4 or 5 years. You have to give him that. And because he is actually recruiting well, and I actually like his staff's different. It's not an SEC staff. He didn't bring in an SEC staff. He brought in like a staff from all over the country. Because the SEC staff didn't work for us with Muschamp. It did not work. But he brought in a staff. Our DC's from Western Kentucky. Our OC was the Panthers O-line coach. You know what I'm saying? So he brought in a lot of guys which I wanted to better hire the Panthers O-line coach, but it is what it is.
Speaking of the Panthers, I do have to mention that Smitty on commentary took a few shots.
That's pretty funny.
Took a few shots at South Carolina randomly.
Yeah, he took that
randomly.
Jake Bentley thing really personal, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not our fault, dude.
It was weird because, you know, he's being paid to do commentary. I realize it's preseason and, like, who really cares? But at the same time, like, he kind of piled on a little bit on South Carolina, and it was kind of out of left field, and he just kind of kept going, which Smitty is probably my all-time favorite player. I love Steve Smith.
I do, too.
But he's a funny guy, too, and actually a cool guy.
I appreciate Smitty taking shots at us, man. Because, man, you know, we'll show him. Man. We'll show him.
But he said, listeners, you probably didn't watch this because why would you? But Panthers' first preseason game, they were kind of going over some of the personnel, and they started talking about Shy Smith. And Smitty said, well, Shy, you know, he got a bad start because he was at South Carolina, you know, which is just out of left field. Nobody was even talking about schools that anybody went to. Yeah. He got bad starts because he came out of South Carolina, but, you know, we'll get him straightened out. He's here now. Yeah. And the commentator sort of laughed, and he said, I didn't know that Utah guys really talked crap about South Carolina. And then Smitty just went off. You know, he kept going. He said, well, you know, we got South Carolina's quarterback, and it didn't go well. And then, the next play happens, and then Smitty just out of the blue just goes, Jake Bentley came to Utah. It was awful. You know, it's like a minute later, he is still talking about it.
So obviously he obviously was really disappointed how Jake Bentley played.
It was personal for him. For some reason, it was personal enough that Jake Bentley going to Utah and not having a good year was enough for him to bring that up while talking about Shy Smith playing for the Panthers. You know, not a strong connection, but Smitty thought it was good enough, I guess. But anyway, yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I ain't got much else to say, Greg. Just I think we'll be strong. I think we'll be strong on the line of scrimmage and a running back. The rest of the team's iffy. I think we have some. I think secondary is a major weakness. People want to talk it up like, oh, this guy's playing well. There's not much depth and not much experience. That's a bad recipe in the SEC, especially when you play. And hell, that's a bad recipe to go to East Carolina, frankly. You know, that's kind of one of those things you're like, you know, that's a little bit, it's kind of a tricky game because
I don't think they're very good, but man, they
got 20 starters back from last year and they get up for these games.
They get up especially at home.
It's a tough game. I think we should win because we're better on the lines of scrimmage, but you start turning the ball up, repping Greenwood, North Carolina, you're going back with a loss. So you got to be really careful.
Doughty Ficklin. You don't just stroll in the Doughty Ficklin and come away with a W.
No, you don't. And that's actually, if you're South Carolina, North Carolina, NC State, Virginia Tech. Oh,
they take pride in these games. They really do. Blake, I assume you will be down in Columbia September 4th, probably at 12 noon for Eastern Illinois. I assume you'll be sitting on the
tell them not to kick off till I get there.
Sitting on the sunny side in 97 degree weather with 65% humidity or 75.
You'll never see me. Never say never, but I doubt you ever see me for a late August, early September game there again, because you talk about being miserably hot in a miserably hot city. Columbia, South Carolina is the hottest city I've ever been to in my life. And it's too hot to watch football. There's no breeze. It's humid. It's hot. It's just too hot, Greg. Now, come October, November.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
Different stories.
Well,
great,
but to put things into perspective, Blake, 2 years ago, I went to the Panthers' first game, which was, of course, you know, September 8th or whatever that is, and it was one of those days, and we were on the sunny side of the stadium.
Yeah,
it just, you know, got these
Clemson,
tickets.
Right?
No, the Panthers.
Oh, Panther.
Yeah,
sorry.
Just got these tickets. They were given to us, so, you know, we didn't have any control over where they were, and wouldn't know if it was a sunny side or not. Just looking at it, but we, you know, we were there, Blake. And at halftime, I went and spent like $11 on a giant Powerade or whatever. You know, like one of those that you get for the free refills out of the machine. Because I was like, I'll pay anything. Yeah. And we went back and sat in the seats for about maybe half the third quarter, and then said, "Nah, this is it." Because it was a 1 o'clock game. And Columbia is hotter than Charlotte is.
Yes.
Not a lot, but it is. It's hotter than Charlotte is, and it was unbearable. Like, I felt like I needed an IV. Like, just give me the bag, you know, the drip.
Yep.
I'm just sweating everywhere, and there's no relief. There's no breeze. You're just sitting in the sun, and you know.
Yeah.
And then Cam Newton's down there doing the Superman, and you're like, man, I got to go.
Oh, jeez.
Get me out of here.
You remember a South Carolina game? I mean, several, but I remember one in particular where it was one of those – this wasn't as hot, but it was we played NC State open the season back in 2008. This is in Columbia. And that was when NC State had Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, freshman. Yeah.
And he started the game and we heard him. We actually had a concussion in that game. But anyway, it was a full stadium, the opening game. And it was like a 6 o'clock kickoff or something weird, you know, that Thursday night. Cause we used to always get that Thursday night kickoff. But it was so muggy and it was so packed. I remember sitting beside him. My seat was beside this big old chubby girl. And she was sitting right beside me, man, and her legs were massive. And like, she kept getting her legs and kept touching my legs.
Did it probably
like,
stick to you?
Yes, dude. Yes, man.
It was gross.
It was gross, man. And so, yeah, even if it's not necessarily hot, if it's humid and muggy and you're cramped in and you're beside somebody who keeps touching you or whatever and you're sweating, it's not fun. So, plus our game this year, you know, Greg, you know what channel our game's on this year? I guess Eastern Illinois. ESPN Plus.
Ooh.
So I gotta pay to watch it because ESPN Plus is a $6 a month subscription.
But you can do it and then cancel, right? So you could do, so it's essentially $6 to watch the
game. $6 game, yeah.
Yeah. That's better than it used to be pay per view, you'd have to pay $19 or whatever to those single games.
Every year it's been free as far as like SEC Network or ESPN or something like that. But this year
I'm gonna
ESPN Plus.
I'm gonna crowdsource some information here. Listeners, okay. I'm curious who you guys use as your TV provider, because oddly enough, where I am, we have Google Fiber. And we use them for internet, but we also use them for TV, and they're cutting their TV service or getting rid of it. So we got to go somewhere else. Obviously, I don't want to switch to Charter, Spectrum. I don't want to do that. I'm curious right now, Blake, our top two are Hulu TV, Hulu Live, and YouTube TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if any listeners have any strong opinions one way or the other. I'll take any advice I can get.
Are they priced about the same?
They're exactly the same, except Hulu ends up being a little more expensive because you got to pay for extra DVR. And it's not just the extra space, Blake. Get this. With the Hulu Live, you get a DVR, but you don't get to fast forward.
Really?
So you can't skip commercials on your DVR unless you pay the extra $10 a month.
Oh, no, go to YouTube TV.
Well, but it depends on how the other channels and what the experience is.
I mean, I'm a Sling customer, except during football season, because Sling has a deal. I mean, I have an antenna to get my locals, so I don't even need the locals. But YouTube TV has your locals.
Yeah.
I just need sports.
That's all I need.
And it has an unlimited DVR.
Right.
Which is all included in the price. Sling had to pay for DVR, and they kind of nickel and dime you. So during football season, I do switch to YouTube TV because the unlimited DVR, and they have everything I want as far as what kind of, you know, I mean, the sports package. And I can cancel any time, and I've never had a playback issue with YouTube TV as far as buffering and that kind of thing.
As far as like usability, is it pretty responsive?
I prefer Sling, but it's not bad. It's got the guide like you have on cable, but it's a little bit different as far as it doesn't look the same. But you get used to it. It's not difficult. You can type in the games you want to see or something, or they'll have. They'll show you the sports that are on at a certain time and then show you whatever. I just ate a bug, I think. It was a fruit fly. For I think I just ate it.
Well, you lost some weight. You can probably use some, you know, put some back on.
So anyway, let me get something to drink.
well,
wash
I think
that fruit fly down. But yeah, YouTube TV to me, Greg, is a pretty darn good option because I've used it before and the price is there and you can cancel any time. And to me, you know, the cancel anytime option is nice. I hate a contract. Despise it.
Well, I don't know, Blake. Are we pretty much wrapping up anyway? I don't know. Is there much else?
I don't know what else you want to talk about unless you want to.
Well, I know we have a few things to talk about that we want to save for other episodes. Listeners, like we said, we're planning on doing an episode on name, image, likeness. It's obviously a big topic that deserves conversation, I think. And then also on conference realignment, which is another big topic and concerns us, not personally, but pretty darn close, especially listeners. And then, of course, we'll at least try to stick with our usual weekly show. It might be more abbreviated than it normally is because of life circumstances, but we're going to try. We're going to shoot for it this season and hope for the best. But listeners, we appreciate you guys sticking with us. Appreciate you reaching out when we were absent. We were absentee podcast hosts for a little while there. And we'd love to hear from you guys. I should have mentioned this at the top, I guess, but blakeandgreg@yahoo.com. blakeandgreg@yahoo.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know if we missed anything, if we're wrong about anything, which would probably fill up our inbox with things we're wrong about.
Yeah, well, we are wrong about a lot of things.
A lot of things.
I don't mind being called out for being a moron.
I will say this, Blake. Last year, I was 99% against the spread. I was, yeah.
You definitely should have gone to Vegas, because I think, I mean, with your last year, you were so good that thinking back, it's like we should have rolled the dice on you, man, and bet everything we had.
If only we had you know, recorded my picks so we could, you know, so we could verify it. But I was 99%. The only game I lost was Clemson, Ohio State. That was the only one that I lost.
And I mean, that's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible. So we'll see what happens. This year I'm shooting for 55%.
It's unbelievable to me, Greg.
55% would be a good year for me this year. It's got to be, I mean, it's going to be a letdown. You can't maintain 99%. You can't do it. But yeah, listeners, we appreciate you guys. Heck, just shoot us an email. Say, hey, by the way, there was a listener that came out of Abilene, Texas. Mm-hmm. I didn't know we had any listeners in Abilene, Texas, but somebody reached out.
Speaking of Abilene, Texas, let's give them a little credit for the Little League World Series team from Wiley won.
I didn't know that. When?
I mean, not the whole thing out, but they won a game in
That's going on right
Pennsylvania.
Now. Oh, it's a Lancaster. It's not Lancaster, is it?
No, what's the damn town in Pennsylvania?
I know what you're talking about, but because it's always in the
Gettysburg.
Same, it's in the same town. It's
it's every year it's in the same place.
Something. I would have been able to say it if you hadn't asked. But
I know.
I think Lancaster or Hershey is, or something. I don't know. Anyway.
God almighty, this one drive me. Because I think about this one, get off this podcast. But anyway, they won their first game or won a game there. And they're from Wiley, Texas, which is south of Abilene.
Are they still in it?
I think so. I think this happened just the other day. Like maybe
Williamsport
won their game.
Williamsport. Had to look it up. There you go. Didn't know it offhand.
And of course, enough to play these 17, 18-year-old kids from the Dominican Republic.
No, they're not in it this year. It's only domestic this year. The
all because of the COVID.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we have a listener in Abilene, Texas. We grew up not far from Abilene, and I have a great recommendation for an insurance agent in Abilene.
Blake
Williams is the guy you need to talk to. Very good, close friend of mine. We were in each other's weddings. Good guy, honest guy. If you need, State Farm insurance.
He deal with insurance and fireworks.
He does.
Better deal with insurance and fireworks. Than Blake Williams, so.
Insurance and fireworks, and has maybe the most interesting family.
And his brother Matt does that same thing in Brownwood, Texas.
Correct.
Does insurance. So if you live in Abilene and you like insurance better out of Brownwood,
yeah, Matt will give you a deal too.
Matt will give you a hookup too. So
mention our name for a discount.
For a free bobblehead or something.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we appreciate you guys. Keep an eye out.
And listeners too, I'm gonna tell you, if we're rusty, give us time. It's been, because we haven't done a podcast since 2019, I guess, so we're getting back into it too, and the world's gone crazy, so we're trying to get back into football mode, but I'm starting to get there now with the season so close, so
correct.
Yeah, pretty excited.
Blake, something tells me our listeners are definitely going to cut us a break, because even at our best, we still sound rusty.
That's true.
The bar is pretty low for us.
We do it because we like it. We don't ask you to donate money to us.
No, don't give me money.
No, this is purely out of love for the game. We love the game. We love to talk about the game, and we love to hear what people think about the game. Because if you like the game like we do, we like you. We want to hang out with you, because there's nothing like hanging out with cool people watching college football. There's something about that kind of fraternity, I guess you could say. It's so cool to me. There's nothing like it. College football fans are the best fans in the world, man. And especially in the South. I'm not trying to be biased to anybody else, but SEC, ACC kind of schools, Big 12. That's my wheelhouse. And I've had so much fun getting to know people over the years who are college football fans. And no matter what your opinion is, hey, look, it's fun to listen to people's opinion and, and also their predictions and all that. It's just fun to do, because we love the game so much. I loved it since I was a kid. Always will, hopefully. I just hope NIL doesn't destroy it, which I'm a little bit worried about.
Yeah,
so
we'll
talk about that next time.
And hopefully we not only share that passion with listeners, but hopefully we sort of take that and add a little something to it. At least that's what we hope.
Something to give you an hour a week or whatever, where you can listen to something and not think about something that maybe you were thinking about that you didn't want to. You know what I mean? Kind of an escape.
Yeah.
That's because, Greg, I listen to podcasts like you do, other ones, and it is an escape. It's an escape to listen to something, kind of get away, listen to something and really get into it, especially football stuff. Preseason like evaluations or, you know, whatever. It's just so much fun to plug in and get away for an hour or so a week. And you got 5 or 6 podcasts to listen to a week, you're doing pretty good. So, yeah. So hopefully we at least keep you halfway entertained, even if we do make stupid statements, which I do on a regular, and I'm cool with that.
And now my cat's come in here and she's yelling at me, and I'm pretty sure my wife's going to come in here and start yelling at me soon too. Cause
and then the baby might come in there and yell at you.
Baby.
Too,
yeah. You know, I don't know much about babies, Blake, but I know they got to eat. I think it's about feeding time. So let me get off here. Listeners, yep. We appreciate you guys. Keep an eye out wherever you downloaded this. Keep an eye out, more to come. Us a line if you get the chance. But anyway, Blake, in the meantime, it's been fun, brother.
Enjoyed it, man. We'll do it again soon.